Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello there, welcome to a brand new ArsBlog ArsCast right here on arsblog.com. How are you? Hope you're well. Thanks for being here as always. Thank you for downloading and listening. Thank you for choosing to put me in your ears once more, or if it's your very first ArsCast, welcome along. This may or may not be representative of all the podcasts we do. I just don't know yet. I'm just starting. I'm just, beginning to make this one up as we go along, but it is going to be a busy show because we've got a lot to discuss. There's a lot going on right at this moment in time. After what has been a difficult week following a 2-1 defeat to Watford, and I just said that out loud again, and it's annoying. It is annoying. That was an annoying game on Tuesday. Irritating. Sometimes you can look at Arsenal, you can see when they're not switched on, when they're not right. And that was obvious on Tuesday night. You could see it from the very start, the way they moved, the way they passed, or the lack of movement, or the lack of pad, just everything in that first 45 minutes was terrible. It's so hard to understand exactly why that is. What is it that makes them just shit for 45 minutes when we know they can be so much better than that? We know they can be a lot better than that, but we're going to talk a bit about the Watford game and the consequences of that, obviously, and the team he selected and everything else. We're going to discuss that. I know it's not the most fun thing to talk about, but it is what it is. This is what we're here for. We're a football podcast. Things go up and things go down. Things are good and things are bad. And, we're here either way. So we'll try and make some sense of that with our guest. Philippe Auclair will be joining me now in a few moments' time. The other thing, of course, we've got to talk about is this weekend's game against Chelsea. 12:30, away from home, pressure's on, Saturday morning. What could go wrong? Pretty much lots. Lots could go wrong. Lots could go wrong. Especially, when you don't have, what's that thing that most teams they like to have, and it's good and useful, and it makes the team work. What is the word I'm looking for? Midfield. Midfield. We don't have one of those, which is a bit of a problem, because they're useful. They're good. They help you control a football game, but we don't have one because we've only got one, what you would call established central midfield player fit or available, and that's Francis Coquelin. Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, probably the man who's going to get the nod alongside him, but that's not ideal. I know he played well against Southampton, but, it was Southampton. It would have to be, I think, if Oxlade-Chamberlain was playing alongside Coquelin, it's going to require a coming-of-age performance from him in that role, which is not necessarily his most familiar role, but the role that seems to suit him best, in fairness. If that's me, that's the sound of me there clutching at straws. But hey, what else can we do? We don't have anyone else. Aaron Ramsey? Mohamed Elneny? Granit Xhaka? Santi Cazorla? Of course, Jack Wilshere. Where are you, Jack? What'd you do that for, Jack? We could have used you. We could have used you now. Could have used you before now. You would have been quite useful, given, you're a midfield player who can play in the midfield that we don't have. But no, you didn't get in the England squad, and you decided you'd go and play in Bournemouth. And we decided we'd let you I mean, what the fuck? Why didn't someone just tell him to sit down and shut the fuck up and get his head down and work hard? Anyway, this is going to be a problem because the pressure of this game is enormous. There's no two ways about it. It is a game that could pretty much end whatever slim title hopes we have already, or hopes of staying in the title race. If Chelsea win, they're 12 points ahead of us. 12 points. That's that. That's it. Game over. Toast. You're dead. Done. Dusted. Kick the bucket. It is an ex-title challenge. Draw. There are 9 points still. And look, doesn't look likely that we would be able to overturn that. But you know, you're still there. It's sort of touching distance. 6 points. Then it becomes a little bit interesting. Just a little bit of doubt might creep into Chelsea's mind. It's only 6 points. Draw a couple of games, lose a game. Of course, it's dependent on us winning. But, you know, I'm just saying, there's a lot riding on this game. We've got a lot to try and salvage after what we did in midweek. There's a lot to make up for. Whether or not we can do it remains to be seen. But if we lose, oh my goodness, that's it, it's done. And if we win, then there's still a lot of work to do and a lot of games to play, but it's not impossible that things might tighten up. And at least, you know, it would keep things interesting. I know we've still got some Champions League and FA Cup, but you know, the league is the bread and butter. So I don't know. Can this team cope with the pressure of 12:30 away on a Saturday morning against Chelsea? If they can't cope with the pressure of 7:45 on a Tuesday night against Watford? I don't know. I wish I knew. If I knew, I'd tell you all, save you the heartbreak, or tell you to prepare yourselves for something awesome. But I don't know. I'm just going to have to experience it, endure it. Like everyone else on Saturday, we'll see. But look, let's chat a bit more about this with Philippe Auclair. We're going to do this in two parts, so there'll be a little break in the middle. I'm not going to say anything, but we'll pick up the conversation. But there'll be just a small break somewhere in the middle. But we're going to talk about it all. We're going to talk about Chelsea. We're going to talk about Watford. We're going to talk about midfield and Aaron Ramsey and also Arsene Wenger and what the future might hold for him in various scenarios and what the club might be thinking or not thinking. We're going to do all that. So let's do it. Let's get on with the show and let's chat with Philippe Auclair. Hello, Philippe.
Good morning to you, Andrew.
Let's start with an issue that has been troubling people for a little while now, and that's Arsenal's slow starts in certain games. At Southampton in the FA Cup, can we draw any correlation between the selection of a pacey, fluid front three and the way that Arsenal started? And without wanting to say that it's all necessarily his fault, the selection of Olivier Giroud and a much slower start in the game against Watford?
Partly, but only partly, I think. I think most of us had the same reaction when we saw that Giroud was in the starting 11, because you knew, obviously, that you were going to face a team that would play with all the men behind the ball, basically, and that in those particular, unless that team was not well equipped to deal with the aerial presence of Giroud, a better way to attack that team is basically to pull it in parts of the park where it doesn't want to be. So you've got to make the pitch bigger, and making the pitch bigger against a team that plays in his 30 yards is to go, well, first of all, quick combinations, quick passing, but also width. And if you've got somebody who is very static in there, which is Giroud's, I wouldn't say problem, that's the way he is, you're not helping him and you're not helping yourself. And the fact that he was withdrawn at halftime, when honestly he hadn't been the worst of the team, not by any stretch of the imagination, as a matter of fact, showed that Wenger realized, I've made the wrong choice here. But I think it's only part of the it's only part of the problem. I think yet again, the idea that you could treat a game as a kind of run-up to another game has been shown to be one of the best ways to shoot yourself in the foot and not to miss.
So you're talking about the team selection that he made, yeah, and the changes that he made. But I mean,
absolutely made no sense to me whatsoever. If you've got a player who is on a hat trick, if you've got Oxlade-Chamberlain, who is coming back, has been coming back in really good form for a while now, has just produced his best performance in ages, Arsenal shirt, and it looks very vivacious, very inventive, and suddenly you change that, and you know, Ramsey in that position again, I personally can't have it.
Okay, well, look, hang on. Let me come back to Aaron Ramsey, because I want to discuss that with you in a little bit more detail. But just in terms of his team selection, in terms of personnel, I guess there were some mitigating circumstances, because we've talked down the years about Arsenal injuries and not managing the players as well as we might. And Theo Walcott hadn't played since December 21st, came back, did 90 minutes, and the manager said afterwards he was a little bit stiff. He didn't train, so he didn't want to start him. Danny Welbeck, of course, coming back after 9 months out, more or less, starting his first game. So his absence is sort of understandable as you ease a player back in. So was it more to do with personnel or system? Because he could have played Alexis Sanchez as his centre forward, and he could have put Alex Iwobi and Lucas Perez in the team, which would have made it much more like the team against Southampton.
Yes, that's absolutely true. And the fact that Lucas is not quite getting the amount of game time that we'd like him to have, I mean, I think all Arsenal fans would agree with that. He's been very, very bright indeed.
Do you like him?
I do like him. I do like the way he involves himself in matches, the way this positivity. He's obviously somebody who doesn't know. He's not a fearful sort of attacker. I'm not saying he's the best player there is. You know, I'm not saying that. And I'm saying his attitude is absolutely spot on.
Yeah.
And he's a fine finisher. He's a fine finisher, and he's quick. And he's always looking for you know, the pass, the vertical pass, the one that will hurt.
Yeah.
And so these are qualities, especially again against a team that is going to play with a packed defence. You can imagine him, you know, perhaps having a bigger role. Yes, I mean, I take what you're saying with perhaps in the case of Theo Walcott. I wouldn't take it in the case of Danny Welbeck.
Really? I mean,
what's the? I mean, did he look tired? And I mean,
he only played 60 minutes, in fairness, against Southampton. And yes. I think when a player has been out for that length of time,
he's so sharp. He does. But he wants to, unless they know. You know, obviously they know things we don't. Could it be that you know, he was really stiff? You know, 24 hours, 48 hours after the game, and they thought we can't risk him. You know?
Yeah.
On the other hand, Ramsey pulled out with 20 minutes on the clock, so there you go.
Well, there you go. So, look, I think it really is a question of system more than personnel. So why do you think that he reverted to that particular system with Giroud there and with Gabriel as well at right back, when you talk about needing width? And to be fair to him, he tried his best to provide some width, but he's not naturally that kind of a player as a central defender. So, I mean, why do you think he eschewed the option of Alexis, Lucas and Iwobi and went for Giroud? Is it like a safety first kind of thing? Does he just feel comfortable with that?
Yeah, I think there's a question of comfort. There's also the fact that Giroud has had, you know, his goal-scoring record has been terrific of late.
Yeah.
And perhaps he was not expecting that kind of resistance from Watford. I think there was quite a bit of it was due to underestimation of how Watford would perform. Because their recent run of results had been very, very poor. They'd been dealing with a huge number of injuries. You know, who can, you know, when you if you tell me that Eunice Cavill is going to have a great game, I'm looking at you in disbelief. You know, I think he underestimated the threat that Watford posed. But to be honest, I think we're nitpicking here, because the reason why Arsenal lost that game was not because of a lack of penetration. It was because they defended, or rather did not defend, for the first 45 minutes, and that the midfield was completely out of position. There was the runners were not willing enough. They were obviously, you know, put in extremely difficult situations, panic situations, by a Watford team that had barely scored a goal in the previous games. And you know, I'm absolutely frank. I was not at the Emirates on that occasion. I was following another London team playing in Liverpool. Mm. But I watched that first half again, and then I stopped there. The Arsenal one, that is, because yeah. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. It's just extraordinary to see players out of position to that extent. I mean, there's a, if you talk about the system, the big problem with the system for me, even more than the fact that it lacked perhaps the speed up front, was the way it was organized, or rather disorganized, in what I would call the back six in front of Petr Cech.
Yeah, the midfield.
Without Cech, actually, it would have been 3-0 at halftime.
Sure, the midfield is certainly a worry at the moment, isn't it? Because
very much so.
Not just in terms of personnel, but I think what we can say without any real fear of being contradicted is that Aaron Ramsey and Francis Coquelin as a combination is not one that works. It hasn't ever really worked. And the other night, even if it was only 18 minutes before Aaron Ramsey had to go off injured, it didn't work again. I thought there was something quite promising about Ramsey and Xhaka because they seem to complement each other. But Coquelin really only seems to work with Santi Cazorla.
Yes.
Aaron Ramsey only really works with Granit Xhaka, as much as we can tell. So we've got a couple of Goldilocks players there for whom everything has to be yeah. just right. We'll come on to Ramsey in a second, but just in general terms, in looking ahead even to the Chelsea game and the midfield options that he's got, how on earth is he going to sort this one?
To be honest, it's a question I'm asking myself, because Xhaka is still unavailable. Ramsey's injured. Elneny was injured. In any way, Egypt is in the final of the African Cup of Nations.
Yeah.
Because he's a kind of safety first kind of option. And I think he's never really disappointed. He's solid. He's not the greatest midfield player that you will in the Arsenal squad. But will we see Oxlade-Chamberlain again in a deep role?
We might have to. I don't think he's got any other choice.
Are there any other options? I mean, I can't think of any others unless you... I don't know.
Well, he has
what
spoken
else,
about...
What else could you do, actually? You know, I'm going through the names in my mind, and I'm thinking, well, what are you going to do?
Well, it's Iwobi or Maitland-Niles or Coquelin. It's Coquelin plus
Maitland-Niles.
One.
You can't have Maitland-Niles in your blessed socks against the best team in the Premier League.
Listen, I agree, but those are the options that he's got, you know? So it's got to be... It's really only going to be Coquelin and Oxlade-Chamberlain, isn't it?
Yes, unless you change the system, of course.
Well, how likely is that? That's not something he seems inclined to do ever.
As likely as John Redwood voting to remain in the European Union.
Okay, so...
I'm terribly sorry to have mentioned that cunt.
That's all right.
And I warned you. I had warned you.
That's fine.
That's fine. But, yeah, well, you could say maybe a way to go with that would be a 4-1-4-1, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Just a single holding midfielder. And to be honest, Andrew, I don't know.
Yeah.
And I think he must be tearing his hair at the moment, wondering, what am I going to do?
Yeah. Yeah,
I mean, you would have. Let's think. I mean, what is the likeliest midfield duo? Coquelin
and Oxlade-Chamberlain.
Mm. Which would mean that Coquelin would have to adopt a far more disciplined approach, perhaps, to his game.
Yeah, he'd have to completely be the guy who sits in front of the
never,
back four.
Yeah, be the sentinel, as they say, and really patrol that area and not move out of it, which he's sometimes tempted to do. He can be quite rash.
Mm.
You know, he looks for interceptions. He looks for crunching tackles in that area. And, you know, you miss it. Well, that's it.
Do you think that's a job that he might be slightly better suited for, rather than the one which sees him pushing high up the pitch? And you have to assume to an extent that he's being asked to do that job by the manager, to press high up the pitch, to try and win the ball back higher up the pitch, rather than sort of sit as a traditional holding midfield player, because he tends to be much further forward than, let's say, Xhaka or even Ramsey. You look around and Coquelin is the guy who's further ahead, and you would naturally think that those roles would be reversed. So, I mean, is that in his locker to be able to do that if Arsene Wenger says to him,
well,
look, this weekend, this is what you got to do?
You were talking about the combination with Cazorla.
Yeah.
Maybe, you know, you have to think why. Well, when they've been played together, it worked, didn't it? So if you have somebody who plays the Cassola role, which is basically the deep lying playmaker, and it's Oxlade-Chamberlain, could work. But again, it's asking a lot of Coquelin, to be honest. I don't think such a responsibility should be put on the shoulders of a player who is willing, of a player who is not perhaps the most disciplined of them all, a bit rash, who is dynamic. And I'm trying as well to think about the way that Chelsea line up. They pose a different problem. They're not Watford. They're not afraid at all to sit back and wait, as they showed against Liverpool.
Yeah.
As they showed against Manchester City. Against the bigger teams, they tend to have a, I wouldn't say a cautious approach, because I don't think it's caution. I think it's just bloody well organized. But they are very quick to cut out space around the 40, you know, around the 40 yards and so forth, and then to project themselves incredibly quickly by using the width and the pace of their wing backs. So they pose a problem which is completely different from other teams. And the solution that we're thinking of would perhaps work against another team, a team which wouldn't be Chelsea.
Yeah.
I have to say that I'm not... the only reason why I'm optimistic is because it would be absolutely typical that if after losing against Watford, Arsenal beat Chelsea. That would be absolutely typical. And then everybody would be going, oh shit, if we'd won last weekend, look where we would be in the table.
Yeah.
That would be so typical Arsenal, that it's a possibility. But on paper, it's a really tough one. You will need, against a back three, what do you do? You have to have width.
Yeah.
You cannot play without proper wingers and a single center forward. That doesn't work. You have to play a kind of 4-3-3, or at least with, you've got to pin the wing backs back. You've got to have Moses and Alonso playing almost on the same line as Cahill, Azpilicueta and David Luiz, if Luiz is fit. So that means having on the wings players who are quick and players who are genuine wingers and can also beat their own man. There aren't that many like this, by the way, in the Arsenal team.
Yeah.
Because Alexis Iwobi had a great game, by the way, against Watford.
Yeah,
had a great second half.
He really did stand out in that second half.
Yeah.
He's a young man who looks, aggressive and brave and willing to try things. And I think Arsenal lost a lot of momentum when he was moved back into the centre of midfield, to bring on Lucas Perez, which you can understand. But like many of the decisions the other night, it didn't really work out. But let's talk about Aaron Ramsey for a few minutes. I wrote about him yesterday on the blog. I think obviously he's got issues with his form, with where exactly he fits into this team. And I think to a certain extent, the criticism of him is a little bit unfair, a little bit over the top. But it feels very much at the moment like everything that could possibly go wrong to him does go wrong to him. And that when that does happen, we've seen it down the years before with players, that there becomes like this critical mass of opinion where it's almost impossible for that player, regardless of how well he does or how well he plays, to turn that around. And of course, when there is that weight, that pressure on your shoulders, it can also seriously impact a player and how he plays.
Yes.
How do you view what's going on with Ramsey and the way that perhaps the last couple of seasons have gone for him off the back of that absolutely tremendous season in 2013-14?
Well, the fact that the player suffers muscular injuries on such a regular basis, and let's set aside the problem of, the medical staff and the way that he's looked after. Let's put that aside. A player who has repeated muscular injuries will be, even if unconsciously, he'll be very careful as to what he does on the pitch in terms of the effort, the sprints, the repetition of sprints in particular. And he will tend to play within himself. He will try to play himself back in, and which is one of the reasons that why we haven't seen with Arsenal, and again, there's a problem of system here, but it's not just the system, the Aaron Ramsey we saw with Wales at the Euro, who was so dynamic and so trenchant we haven't seen him. It's not just a question of position and tactical setup. It's also, I think, a psychological problem for the player himself. What is his best position in the team? He is at his best when he can do those late runs in the box, because he's one, you know, he's one of the rare midfielders. You wouldn't say that of Coquelin. You wouldn't say that of Xhaka. You wouldn't say that of Elneny. You wouldn't even say that of Oxlade-Chamberlain. He's one of those midfielders who can actually, you know, have the run in the box and score or make the decisive pass.
Yeah.
But where does he have to play to be able to do that? It's a bit how to square a circle. He's been played on the right, which is not his natural position, and in which I think his qualities are not best used. It's terrible to say, but in that squad, it's very difficult for me to think of a place where he fits as a starter. And unless you put it, what, in a number 10 position?
Yeah.
It's not, by the way, trying to diminish the player or to say, oh, he's rubbish or whatever. No, it's not of that. It's that in the way that Arsenal is set up, it's very difficult to find a way in which to fit a player who has got the profile of Aaron Ramsey, given the competition for places in the three supporting the lone centre forward. Mm. And I think against as well, he's not also tactically the most disciplined of players.
I think that's fair.
That's fair enough. So when you're playing, and if we think specifically about Chelsea, if you're playing against the team which is the best organised in the league at the moment, do you want somebody who hasn't quite got the tactical nous and discipline on the field?
Mm.
You know, which is why I don't think he would have been considered, to be honest, if he hadn't been injured. So
you think
at the moment it's all ifs and buts. I'm sorry about that, but it's a question. You know, the fact that you asked the question, the fact that you spoke or wrote at length about him, you know, shows. But yeah, it's a question we've all been asking ourselves for a very long time now.
Mm. Does there come a point where the best thing for all concerned is a parting of the ways? Or does Arsene Wenger continue? I mean, there's obviously a reason why Arsene Wenger, as soon as he's fit, wants him in his team, because he sees qualities in Ramsey that he wants. He likes those late runs into the box. He's got a midfielder who can finish, who can create, albeit he hasn't really done that to a large extent for us in the same way, as you said, that he's done it for Wales. You know, Arsene Wenger obviously sees all these qualities in him and wants those in his team, but can it be a case that by doing that you make things imbalanced and you don't get the best thing for the team and you don't get the best thing for the player?
I would agree with every single point you just made. Yes.
Okay.
Sorry.
No, that's okay. All right. Well, let's.
Sorry to agree.
I am different. The rules for me are different. I watch my team play in a hotel. I am different. My assistant had six matches stadium ban. I didn't touch anyone. I am different. Today I was told sit down or I have to send you to the stands. The rules for me are different. I am different. You know clearly I am different. The rules for me are different.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog. All right, let's look at the title race itself. And obviously this weekend's game against Chelsea is one that could essentially end Arsenal's involvement in it. They're very much hanging on. And I think everybody else, you know, it's overlooked is just about hanging on to Chelsea, because while there's some equivalency between Arsenal, I mean, Arsenal, if you look at the table, are doing better than Liverpool. They're doing better than Manchester United, Manchester City. They have the same points as Tottenham. So that group of teams is really, really tight. And the thing that makes this season, I guess, frustrating is that there's one team that is stand out better than everybody else.
Oh, yes. Or other teams which are not firing on all cylinders and have all gone through weird patches and strange patches. And the question is, to do anything, you've got to put together strings of result. And that every time that it looks like it was going to happen, because we shouldn't forget, before that defeat against Watford, actually it was four wins and a draw in the previous five games. So that was good, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And you could say, well, you know, it's only 9 points. It's, you know, it should be only six, and it could have been only three.
Yeah.
But yes, I mean, it's what I'm a little bit worried about is the fact that I can see Manchester City finishing the season very, very strongly indeed.
Because they've gone through their bad patch.
I think they are. Mm. And I think that very often the results have been misleading. I mean, they have sometimes played actually quite well. They've had a couple of crazy results. I mean, the one against Everton was completely mad. I think Everton had four shots on goal and scored four times. And they were great on the day. But I don't think you're going to see that Manchester City very often. I was very, very impressed with them. When I saw them against Spurs, I must say, that was a very, very high level game, and I cannot see Spurs putting the foot off the pedal. It might be that Liverpool, you know, carries on as they are at the moment, only got 3 points out of 12, so that's encouraging. United are now three draws on the trot. That's very encouraging and very funny. It might be okay, and maybe the fact that we have a team in Chelsea that is so much above the others might make us a little bit overcritical. But then again, Andrew, I look at the squad. I look at the squad at the beginning of the season, and I'm thinking of the games which have been lost, mm-hmm. starting with the one against Liverpool, and I'm thinking there's no way this team should be where it is right now, have this number of points. I mean, it's 2 points per game. That's not good enough for a would-be champion. No way. Mm. And it's not because the others have been underperforming that, you know, what does it mean that Arsenal has been underperforming as well?
Yeah. Well,
I know, I'm sorry.
No, I'm fine. I mean, I think it's a reasonable point. Where do you think, you know, stepping back from it, let's say Arsenal finish the season second and end up 9 points behind a Chelsea side that have got, you know, close to 95 points. Let's say
that. I'm biting your hand off right now.
No, I know. Okay. Objectively, if you were looking at that, you would say that's not bad. Because the only one team can win the league, and the team that's won the league has played amazingly well, and they deserve to be champions. Even if, let's say, Arsenal do what they did against Leicester last season, beat the champions twice, there's a little trophy for us, etc., etc. But subjectively, as we're looking at it, and as Arsenal fans will look at it, it is the 13th or 14th season without winning the Premier League, without necessarily competing for the Premier League. So there's context. There's got to be some context added to that. So as we look at the managerial situation and Arsene Wenger heading into the last 6 months of his current deal, as he is at the moment, his contract expires in June, where would that leave him if we're going to look at it from that subjective point of view?
From a subjective point of view, from a subjective objective point of view, he's going to stay, right?
Do you think so?
Yeah. From a subjective point of view, I think there's a problem with the capacity. I mean, there are things he hasn't lost. He can still identify great players. He can still make his players play the kind of football that we all want to watch, and so forth. The recruitment. I mean, you know, we're still out on Xhaka. We're a bit disappointed, but by and large, hasn't been crap. Let's be fair. There's been some very good additions to the squad over the past few years.
Yeah.
So I think that side of it is fine. Tactically, he'll never change. We know that. He's not, even though he's now surrounded with this team of analysts who feed him extraordinarily precise statistics about this, that, and the other, he's not going to change. We know that. But what is a problem for me is the fact that it's not just not competing, it's the way in which you don't compete. And I'm thinking, well, the first 45 minutes against Watford. I'm thinking about the draw against Bournemouth. I'm thinking about the win against Burnley. I'm thinking about the defeats against Manchester City and Everton. Mm. And I'm thinking there's a mental block here, or rather there is not, obviously, the capacity from the manager to raise his squad mentally, psychologically for the occasion, or during a game when things suddenly don't go that well. There's a lack of reactivity in that team unless it's too late. It just about worked against Burnley, but that was a bit of a fluke. Let's be absolutely fair about that. Mm-hmm. But the other games I've named, I mean, there was a real problem in terms of players being simply G'd up enough to go and protect what should have been, for example, two wins against Everton and City.
Yeah.
I was at those games and I was flabbergasted by the way that it's a team that finds it very difficult to up the tempo or to change its attitude. Unless, it's against the Burnley and, you're going to finish, it's going to be frantic and so forth, so different. But against teams of a similar caliber, whereas those teams were able to raise their game and to find this extra little bit, the marginal gain in terms of aggressivity in particular, you're not competing, and that's what leaves you so deflated after a game. If you lose 2-1 against Manchester City in Manchester, come on, this is not a humiliating result. When you are ahead in that game and you're really running, circles around the other team and you're playing in second gear and you're not able to go into third and fourth when need be,
well,
this is where you've got a problem. This is where you've got to question what can the manager do about that. And the fact is that almost every time it's happened, and I'm saying almost every time, it might be even every time this has happened this season and very often in previous seasons, Arsenal has been found wanting. Yeah. In that respect. And this is where you've got to think, all right, this is the famous comfort zone. Arsenal is a bit too comfortable, and you wonder if it's not a bit too comfortable to be an Arsenal player when it comes to underperforming.
And is it also comfortable to be the Arsenal manager?
It
would be fair to say. There is a familiarity to what's happened and a familiarity to the results and the performances. The Watford game was like playing Swansea last season. It was like playing Swansea the season before. There have been games where this team has had the opportunity to make a bit of a statement about itself. Yes, we are title contenders. Yes, we really want this. And they haven't been able to do it. I mean, did you see the interview Theo Walcott gave where he talked about Arsene Wenger giving a rousing speech in the dressing room about how much he wants to win the title? He likened it to Al Pacino's great speech from the film in I think it's Any Given Sunday, where he's the coach in the locker room and he's inspiring his men. And you're thinking, I mean, I'm sure it was a great speech or something that he, but why is it being put out there in the public? I don't quite understand it from the player's point of view. There's more, like, forget the talking, tell that story at the end of the season when you've got a trophy in your hands.
When you've got the trophy in your hands, absolutely. And, I mean, speeches don't win games. I mean, think of Graham Taylor's magnificent speech for England. Mm. I think it was against Norway, which is one of the great, great rousing speeches that you will ever hear. Didn't prevent the result not to be exactly what we would have wished. But the fact as well that you single out one occasion like that, then it makes you think, oh, so it doesn't happen that often, does it?
Mm.
So, and he's never been that kind of manager. He's somebody who very much likes, when things are not going well, to, first of all, let it sink in their players that they've underperformed themselves. He treats them as grown-ups.
Yeah.
And he wants them to be, to take on their responsibilities. And this is how he discerns the players who are the real guys from those who perhaps don't have a future at the club.
Mm.
And that's one way of going about it. But again, with this particular bunch of players, the other thing that surprised me, I mean, coming back to Watford, sorry to go back about that.
No, that's okay.
Is that the reaction should also come from within the team. Mm. And who did you see who reacted in that first half against Watford? I mean, Mustafi and Koscielny were going mad, but they were going mad because nobody was protecting them, nobody was doing their job. But where did you see that, you know, it was personal reactions, it wasn't a collective reaction.
Yeah.
And in a way, the manager is also responsible for that.
Sure.
Sure. So this is where the problem lies. I mean, yes, it is comfortable. It's comfortable for the board. If Arsenal finish second, which is a possibility, you look back and you think, yeah, actually, objectively speaking, if you look at facts and points and so forth, that's actually a pretty decent season. Qualification for the Champions League. Chelsea was way ahead of everybody else, et cetera, et cetera. But that simply isn't good enough, is it?
No. Okay. So what happens if Arsenal finish fifth? What happens if Arsenal don't win enough games to get themselves Champions League football? What happens if they fall out of the top four for the first time in Arsene Wenger's time at the club? They've got the prospect of Europa League football next season to try and sell to their corporate sponsors and all that kind of stuff. What happens then? Because then it becomes much less comfortable for Arsene Wenger. It becomes much less comfortable for the board, because however you can talk about, well, second to a team that's been great, but fifth, when so many other teams haven't been quite as great, becomes a much more challenging situation. Do you think that's a scenario that could lead to a change of manager?
Not necessarily. I think the decision will come from Arsene anyway. It certainly is not going to come from the chairman.
Mm.
It could come from Ivan Gazidis, I suppose. but I think the decision will ultimately be with Arsene himself. And knowing him, I would be tempted to say that he will be, in a way, energized by that. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
They will say, no, I want to prove that it was
God, no. I can't say. I mean, I just cannot see a situation where, if we finish fifth, I think the reaction will be such that if Arsene Wenger is making the decision, and we know that to a certain extent, not just him, but football managers in general are a little bit like ostriches. You know, the head is in the sand and they're focused on their job. They don't really pay any attention to what's being said on social media or Twitter. And, you know, you can understand that. But I think just the general sentiment will be so...
Yes.
It will be so all-encompassing. Yes. Yeah, it'll be deflationary. And, you know, that will be evident in what happens in the ground. The way
especially
that people...
As the club could lose its star player.
Of course.
And, you know, you could imagine if Alexis doesn't have... I mean, if I needed to say the name, if Alexis doesn't have Champions League football next season, I would certainly never put him in the category of those who haven't tried hard enough for that. If you lose that, you're in dire trouble. I agree with you. But on the other hand, there is nothing that suggests that plans have been put in place to seek a successor.
Is all the talk about Max Allegri, is that just simply paper talk?
Allegri at the moment is not doing too badly, is he?
No.
Okay. you could even say that for me, they're in my top four for the Champions League this season, right? Mm. I can see them doing something really pretty special. Yes, it would be a superb choice, but it's not available. To be honest, I can't recall how long he's got left on his contract, to be honest.
Yeah.
But the difference, what I'm more hinting at is the fact that, for example, if you take a club like Bayern, okay, I'm taking a very, very big club here.
Yeah.
When they had already prepared Heinke's succession when he won the Champions League, they had prepared Guardiola's succession before he actually decided to take a sabbatical and then to join Manchester City. They had plans in place. I cannot see that at the moment being the case with... even Chelsea had actually made a lot of work. I mean, the Conte had been... They had him in his sights and their sights a long, long time before he signed the actual contract.
Yeah.
And I don't see that. It's not the way Arsenal have been functioning. To be honest, I don't know the way Arsenal have been functioning, because when you've got a manager in place for 20 years, it's a kind of thing. It's a kind of mental situation in which you simply don't know what it's like to change a manager. Yeah. Nobody in that club knows what it is to change a manager.
That's a really good point.
And therefore... Who do you turn to? Do you turn to David Dean?
Josh Kroenke can pick the next manager, clearly.
Bob Bradley. Josh Kroenke, of course. But you need to have the know-how within the board and so forth. And the only person perhaps who has this know-how, who knows this is profession well enough, is Arsene himself.
Yeah.
In a game of ifs and buts, there are so many things that seem to point towards a continuation of the present regime, unless Arsene himself decides I've gone as far as I possibly could, and puts into practice what he said many times before, which is, when I feel that I'm no longer able to manage that club at the level at which it should be managed, when I don't think that I've got it in me to prepare my teams and motivate them as I did before, this is the moment when I decide to stop.
But he's also said, Philippe, that he would have no part in selecting his successor, that that's not his role, that's not his job, which, I think he can take as fair enough. That really shouldn't be his job. So.
No.
Here we are, back to Josh Kroenke then.
I'd rather Andrew Mangan was in charge of that, to be honest. But
that's fine. I'll do that for a small fee if they're...
Yes, absolutely. Gazidis, of course. Knows,
sure.
Yeah, but again, and it's a question as well of the... I don't know, the way that the club is... it seems to operate in almost like in a bubble of its own. I don't get the idea of a club which is always looking outside to think, what can we do? Who can we bring to do this and do that? So they do it for, they got a new scout, they got a new analysis team. Okay, that's fine. When it comes to the big picture, the strategy, I can't see anything. Mm. What I can see is it's a bit like a luxury shop. On a high street or somewhere in Knightsbridge. It's doing very well, it's doing good business, it's got a faithful custom, but it will never look outside to open another branch. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
Arsenal seems to be very closed on itself. You don't get this feeling that, yes, they're part of the European elite, but you don't get this feeling that there are things happening all the time. People are looking left, right, and center. And again, for who's going to be the next manager, who's going to be the technical staff as well, the coaching staff.
Yeah.
It's the coaching staff has not evolved an awful lot over the years.
Nor the structures, of course, when you have a man in charge for 20 years, when you look at the way that modern coaches operate, they need structures around them that the modern managers don't really do. Like Arsene Wenger does a lot of the work that you would have to get staff or new recruits in to actually do to help support a new coach. So it's...
Well, he is the coach, the manager, and the sports director.
Yeah.
All in.
Yeah.
That's too many.
Mm-hmm.
Regardless of, you know, the qualities he has, and which I will be the last person to deny, regardless of all, you know, his great, you know, magnificent record in many ways, he cannot do all these three jobs. But this is something we've spoken about so many times before. And if he were able to do all these three jobs, Arsenal would have been champion probably, you know, last season, not Leicester.
Yeah.
So, yes, if we come to the situation when Arsenal finishes fifth, the question is how they will react, how Josh Kroenke and Stan Kroenke will react to that. Mm.
Well,
I mean, have they been so worried about situations like that in US sports? I don't think so.
No, I don't.
They haven't
think
been
so.
Exactly proactive when things were not going that well in their franchises, provided the bottom line was still what they wanted it to be.
Mm. Well, you know, that's the thing. Will the bottom line? You can't sell Europa League football to blue chip corporate people the way that you can the Champions League, of course, even if we all have, I guess, doubts about the way that the Champions League is going and how attractive it is compared to the way it used to be. But we'll have to wait and see. But look, Philippe, we better leave it there. They say, may you live in interesting times. We're definitely doing that, especially from an Arsenal point of view. Thank you as ever. We'll catch up soon.
Thank you very much, Andrew.
Thank you very much indeed to Philippe. You know where to find him. He's at Philippe Auclair on Twitter, at Philippe Auclair. And I'm not really sure what else I can add to that discussion. I'll try. There were a couple of little things that we might touch on ahead of tomorrow's game against Chelsea. The midfield obviously is going to be the important thing. How he manages to find a blend or deal with the absence of so many good players, or, you know, put together a duo who haven't really played together before and we've no idea whether or not they're going to work together. That's obviously going to be a massive issue for him. But, you know, you look across the rest of the team, there's a lot of quality in there. You know, back four should be solid. A very experienced goalkeeper, Hector Bellerin, back in at right back will make the team better and hopefully go some way to stopping Eden Hazard if he's playing. There was some talk of him having a hamstring injury, but I'm not 100% sure on that. Mesut Ozil, hugely creative. We need him to do it in a big game. And up front, you're looking at him selecting Alexis Sanchez as the main striker. That, for me, is going to be the key thing. That is what will give us a chance to win this game. Who he picks alongside him, I'm not sure. I think it's going to be Iwobi because he was so good the other night. Iwobi plus one. Will it be Welbeck? Will it be Walcott? Will it be Lucas Perez? It can't be Olivier Giroud up front. It just can't be him. And I'm not trying to blame him for what happened against Watford, but what I'm saying is that what he's shown us this season is that he's a guy who is capable of making an impact late in the game. He has done it numerous times this season. And when you think back to the Watford game in the last 20 minutes, you're going, you know what we could do with right now? We could do with a like Olivier Giroud kind of player coming on. That guy where we can look up and at least put some balls in there and, you know, try and win second balls off him, you know, cause a bit of chaos in the box. But of course, he'd already gone off because either he was injured or, you know, the manager wanted to change things. So I think it's crucial that we go back to Alexis as the main striker. I would be really tempted to play Danny Welbeck with Alex Iwobi. Theo Walcott from the bench, Lucas Perez from the bench, Giroud from the bench if we need them. But I think maybe that front three is the one that would speak to me the most. I'd really like to see Lucas Perez get a bit more time. But just with Danny Welbeck, there's something about Danny Welbeck and Alex Iwobi. They really work well together. And he's got the pace and the power. And, you know, against a back three, just that movement might help pull them around a bit. So that's where we can win it. Midfield is maybe where we could lose it, and he's going to have to pay really close attention to that because it is a very weak area of the team, relatively speaking, against what is, if not the best, one of the best midfields in the Premier League. Matic and Kante have been superb for Chelsea in this winning run that they've had, and that could be the key area. So it's going to be really interesting to see what sort of a team he picks and what sort of a reaction we get from this team, because they must know as well as anybody that unless they win this, their title chances are extremely slim. If they lose it, they know that their title chances are over. Can they cope with that pressure? Can they react? Can they respond to the disappointment in midweek? Can they respond to the pressure? Can they haul Chelsea back into it? Is there more character in this team than we think there is? I guess all we can do is wait and find out. 12:30 tomorrow morning, that's the kickoff. So join us for a live blog. Join us on Arseblog News for all the post-match stats and player ratings. And hopefully we're all in good spirits. And on Monday, myself and James will be here with an Arsecast Extra, looking back on the game and what it means, or what it all might mean one way or the other, for what's going to happen in the rest of this Premier League season. So look, I'm going to keep everything crossed, fingers, toes, the whole lot. So look, I hope you can do likewise. Not that any of it matters. It's down to these guys that go out on the pitch on Saturday. But hopefully we can do what needs to be done, or at least not do the stuff that we shouldn't do to an extent whereby the stuff that we do is successful. I think that's what I'm saying. I'm waffling now. I think I'm scared already. Anyway, look, we'll catch you over the weekend. Catch you on the Arsecast on Monday, and of course here next week with another Arsecast regular. So until then, cheers. Bye-bye.
Underestimate the power of the dark side. If you will not fight, then you will meet your destiny.
Beaten. It is useless to resist. Don't let yourself be destroyed as Obi-Wan did. Don't make me destroy you.
Oi, Vader! You've only cut one of his fucking hands off, mate! Where's that killer instinct? Sort it out, mate! What the fuck is going on here?
He's filming himself at the cinema. What an absolute fucking twat.
Strength. We can end this destructive conflict and bring order to the galaxy.
I'll never join you!
Come with me. It is the only way.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.